Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello, everybody. You're welcome once again to the Game on Sunday podcast. Mike and Lester here with you. And once more, I am joined by Tomás Mulcahy and by Martin Carney to discuss everything in Gaelic games. And there's a lot going on, of course, at the moment, as we all know. I don't know whether to start, lads, with football or with hurling. Martin, let's start with football. What jumped out at you from the weekend? I suppose the fact that Derry are still flying it, like at the top of the standings, kind of, you know, has to be a big thing.
Very much. It has to be a big thing. Like, I mean, again, beating Galway in Salt Hill, as you say yourself, in a very cold Salt Hill on Sunday, you know, it was a very, very good result. I would question one of the Derry goals, actually, the one that where one of their forwards, I think, changed the ball from one hand to the other. That, to me, is a free out in Gaelic football, but I thought he got away with that. But there's no doubt about it, under Mickey Hart, Mickey seems to be just on that winning streak at the moment. And playing a strong team in every possible game, you know, getting huge games again. I think you would have seen at the weekend, particularly from Conor Glasser on the middle of the park and that. And up front, like, the, you know, the likes of Shane McGuigan and those, they're getting scores. I think McGuigan got a goal and 2 points in the game. But overall, I think they put themselves in a nice position. Like, they're probably guaranteed at this stage a place in the league final. They've got 8 points. They've twice as many points as any of the other teams. And I think one more game or one more win in the remaining games, being against, I think it's Dublin the next day, which will be next weekend, which will be a big one. The one after that, then they're at away to Mayo, and final game of this is at home to Roscommon, and they'll get sufficient points out of those three games, I think, to bring them into a league final. And I suppose that's where Mickey Hart wanted to bring them, just develop the winning habit. But Galway, like, when you think about it, they have so many players missing at the moment, 7 at least, I think, that they would normally kind of 7 top players, like the likes of Jack Glynn, Liam Silk. You didn't have Damien Comer, you didn't have Shane Walsh the last day. I think when those guys reintegrate into the team, get a little bit of match sharpness, Galway are going to be in a good place. And the guy that has impressed me, Salt Hill lad, John Maher, I thought when I saw him in the first game of the league this year against Mayo, he looked very, very blunt. He didn't seem to have a lot going for him. But the last couple of games, he's really grown into a formidable midfielder. And Galway will be very, very happy about that. So that was one of the games that jumped out at me. The other one was obviously the Dublin Monaghan or the Dublin Kerry game in Croke Park. I thought the football that Dublin played was delightful. And, you know, scoring 318 against Kerry. Kerry just kind of reeling from an early stage. Con Callaghan's hat-trick would have been a big, big thing this weekend. But I'd bring up one point in it, Michael, and it's happened also in the Tyrone Mayo game. The penalties in each of those games were given for fouls outside the large rectangle. Now, the large rectangle in Gaelic football is the penalty area. And yes. To me, I'm beginning to question about this business of players being given, teams being given a penalty. If the referee deems that the foul that happened outside that large rectangle was going to result in a goal. Now,
yes.
this is going to cause a lot of trouble, I think, later on in the championship. It's going to kind of, okay, I think the black card, shall we say, sanction is sufficient for that. But to add a penalty to it, I'm not for it. A penalty area, a large rectangle is the penalty area per se and should be left at that. No complication beyond that by kind of leaving it to a referee's interpretation that the guy who was fouled outside was going to score a goal. Like, I just think it adds in the greyest of grey areas. And from what I've seen of the Conor Callaghan penalty the last day and the Killian O'Connor penalty up in the Mayo Tyrone game that I was at, I just wouldn't agree with. And I feel it's something that needs to be looked at.
But is this not a problem that's in both codes, maybe more in football than it is in hurling, that there are rules kind of being imposed on top of rules? And when do we stop all this business of tweaking things to a point where it's getting literally dizzy?
It's incredible, Michael. And I was listening to Martin there, and I didn't realise that, Martin, to be honest with you.
If
it's deemed as a goal-scoring chance, but it's outside the rectangle.
It's outside the rectangle, and yet you can still award a penalty.
You can award a penalty. Oh, my God, what a farce. What a farce.
Well, I think it's a total farce as well, Tomás. And like I've said that, like Conor Callaghan's, that penalty, I think that offence, shall we say, happened outside the penalty, the large rectangle. Jordan Flynn, the Mayo player, was found outside the large rectangle as he bore down on goals. And the Tyrone centre back in that particular game, I think he was, I'm not sure who it was. It was maybe Cormac Quinn. He was given the black card, but that's sufficient. That's sufficient.
Yeah. And Michael, look, we welcome the new president, Jarrett Burns, on board.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I mean, it's a fantastic achievement for him, and we wish him well in his tenure, but. He was out very quickly in terms of his comments afterwards that he wants to make football more attractive and more entertaining for people. But how's he going to do that, Martin, in terms of like who's making all these changes to the rules in terms of that black card and that rectangle and the margins? That's right. I mean,
yeah, well, are they
worsening football or are they making it better?
I don't think they're making it better. I don't think the forward mark is making it better. It disallows, for example, a defender of, you know, displaying his defensive skills and trying to shepherd, shall we say, the catcher of the ball away from the actual goal, so to speak. The mark in Gaelic football was used to encourage long kicking and to encourage high fielding. But most of the marks that I see, the ball is kind of, shall we say, caught around the belly or caught around the chest.
That's right. Absolutely.
And it hasn't enhanced, shall we say, the amount of long high kicking that it was intended to actually achieve. The other thing about it too, who is doing this? Well, John Tobin has been in charge of a committee over the last number of years, and I think it has done remarkable work on looking at the ratio, for example, of one part of it, the ratio of hand passes to foot passes in football. It has now exceeded 3.2-1. And so what Jarrett Burns has done, the first thing he has done, he has set up a committee headed by Jim Gavin. I think it is Eamon Fitzmaurice, it is James Horn, Maliki Rook, I think Colin Collins, the ex-Clare manager, and Colm Nally. And they're going to see, are there ways that Gaelic football can be improved as a spectator sport, because a lot of people see the endless repetitive use of the hand pass, the lateral play that is norm in the game now. They're seeing that as taking away from the attractiveness of the code. And it'll be fascinating to see what this committee come up with. And Gerald Burns made the point afterwards that next year is a year that you can introduce new rules. So perhaps maybe we would see something that might improve the game. And incidentally, another thing that maybe a lot
Martin could rather include new rules. Could you take out some of them that they already introduced? Because they ain't working, in my view. And I'm looking at from the outside world in, Michael and Lester. I don't know what you're thinking as well, right? And you just mentioned at the start of the program, Martin, about Dublin and the quality of football that they played. Why can't everybody?
But I'm thinking, Tomás, that you pose that issue. What I'm thinking about it is, you know, there is a complexity in the rules. We can all see that. And as you guys said, Gerard Burns is looking to kind of improve that scenario on more football, as we know it, if you like. But the bottom line is, if managers and people behind teams set up structures, you can't stop them from setting up those structures. You can't write a rule book to say, do this and don't do that. You know, they will find ways of working around all that.
Yeah, and the thing about it, Tomás and Michael, whatever you introduce next year, it has to be kind of applicable all the way down to club level. And like, for example, what I'm thinking of, like, I've heard people talking about a shot clock in Gaelic football. I've heard people talking about a half court in Gaelic football, that when you go over the halfway line, you cannot go back into your own half of the field. Yes, I see that workable. But a shot clock, that's all right in Croke Park and Thurles and Cork. But jeepers, in a rural venue, there's not a hope of having that implemented.
Sure. Yeah, we had the same with Hawkeye, Martin. We don't have hockey in a lot of places still, right? You know, and
that's right.
You know, so
when you saw a fabulous example of that 2 weeks ago, like when Dublin played Roscommon in Croke Park, and Roscommon had a legitimate goal disallowed because they felt it was hand passed into the net, whereas it was actually deflected off a Dublin player. Now Hawkeye would have picked up on that, but again, you're right, Tomás. Unless you have that Hawkeye in every ground, in every inter-county ground where games are played, then there's not a sense of equity about things.
There's not.
Let's talk a small bit of hurling for the moment, and good news for him.
I'm just disappointed Michael Martin passed on and Cork's winning against Fermanagh, but maybe we'll come back to that.
We can come back to it. There's plenty of time. Don't worry about that. Cork hurlers, a win on the at last, if you like. You know, not at last, but a win. You know, so that has to be a positive from the weekend.
Oh yeah, very much so, Michael. It had to come, to be honest with you. And even though at one stage of the second half, being 9-10 points ahead, you were saying we were home and hose. But the finishing score, 121-119. Waterford had a very good last 15-minute period, and they pushed Cork to the pin of their collar. And that would disappoint Cork management. They had the foot on the pedal, and they seemed to take it off and made a lot of changes, and it gave Waterford back the initiative. But look, I'm being positive in terms of there was passages of play which were very, very good. They had maybe 10-15 minute periods which were very, very good. After halftime was exceptional. They came out very, very strong. And they didn't do that against Clare. And they paid a heavy price for it. Some things that I liked about last weekend is the likes of Kieran Joyce's number 6. He was absolutely superb for Cork. I thought Brian Hayes, traditionally known as a footballer, acquitted himself very, very well. I think he could be a major, major difference for Cork in terms of being a target man at the edge of the square, at the corner of the square, and even the likes of Patrick Horgan maybe playing off this guy. Jack O'Connor playing off this guy, you know, Conor Lehan playing off this guy, because he is a strong lad, and I thought he acquitted himself very, very well. on the other side, you got to look at Waterford, and I thought Waterford were really poor, and I know they're missing a lot of players because of injuries. And again, Martin and you and myself, Michael, we've mentioned this over the last couple of weeks, the amount of people that have been off the pitch last weekend again with injuries, hamstrings gone.
It's
a seriously worrying team. And again, right, you know, you had Eaton Toomey from Cork. He was out for the last couple of weeks with a hamstring. He starts at midfield with Cork. 10 minutes into the game, he goes down.
That's right.
Holding his hamstring and he's gone. The Kilkenny match, Robbie Flynn back after missing most of the championship last year, goes with a hamstring, gone for 6 to 8 weeks, you know. And I presume it's the same all over the country in terms of guys picking up these type of injuries. And that has to be a concern in terms of championship coming in April, not going to be available maybe for the next two matches. It certainly has a big big negative effect in terms of that player's confidence, his preparation to get his place in the team come championship time.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
You know, there's an exactly mirror image in Mayo's game against Tyrone last weekend. You know, you were talking there about Young Toomey going off injured after 9 minutes. Similarly, Dermot O'Connor, who had been out for a good part of last year, he was gone after 4 minutes with a hamstring injury. And again, the guy who they were pinning a lot of hopes on, Kieran McBride, who was full back in the previous games. He went. He is, I gather, a grade 2 hamstring injury, and he missed most of quite a bit of last year because of these injuries. And the actual damage it does to confidence, and the damage it does to a team structure, and the uncertainty it creates around the whole kind of approach is, I think, it's incalculable in many respects. And you have to look at the amount of training, the type of training and all of those. I know these are professional people that are doing the training and all of that. And who am I to question it in many ways? But as a spectator, I'm just kind of, in a sense, reacting to what I'm seeing in front of them. And like Young Toomey going off and Young O'Connor, Dermot O'Connor going off from an early stage the last day, after all the warm-ups, et cetera, beforehand, you just wonder, are they being asked to do too much by way of training?
Yeah, it's gas, Michael. I was coming out after the Cork match last Sunday, and kind of one former prominent player, when it was mentioned about hamstrings, he says, "Jesus Christ!" He says, "Sure, in our time, weren't we eating those?"
Yeah, that's very good. That's where John went from.
you never.
Well, you know, there was an element of the apes about you down there.
We never heard
Tomas.
Yeah.
Okay, while I have you there, I was listening to that match between Cork and Waterford on the radio, and one thing that came up for mention a couple of times, of course, was the Cork jersey.
Oh my God, but yeah, absolutely. Came up a lot. It's like came up a lot, yeah.
Forever, like, we've known Cork, the blood and bandages, obviously, and all that. Now, kind of, I'm not criticising the jersey by any means, whatever, because things change and all that kind of stuff. But now it's kind of like Cork stroke AC Milan, kind of. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you. And people were surprised, to be honest with you. It looked like a training jersey, a training shorts that you would maybe talk about during the week for training sessions as well, right? You know, and a lot of people were upset because, yeah, we are the red and white. And I look, we've changed in the past Cork have changed in the past, and look, you're looking at commercial entity and stuff like that as well, in terms of you can change every year, maybe every 1 or 2 years, or every 2 years they change and they bring in a new style. They get sales out of it and stuff like that as well. But I think, look, I don't think anybody have any issues with that. I just thought it was, yeah, you're right, like AC Milan or Ajax or something like that. It wasn't the traditional Cork, and I know there was a lot of people upset. But look, if you're a marketing team and it's O'Neill's or it's Sports Direct and stuff like that, they're hitting the younger generation, the younger audience, to see this flashy style jersey with all the different stripes, whatever, all the different colours and stuff like that, because that's what the young people want. That's what the young people want to buy, you know? So there is a method to the marketing behind that as well, and it's relevant to sales and stuff like that. And young kids, they see a Patrick Horgan or they see a Kieran Joyce wearing this. Hey, mammy and daddy, I want one of those for the next match I go to, you know? So, and it's no different to Manchester United. It's no different to Liverpool after last weekend. I'm sure they'll all be wanting to get on the bandwagon with that as well, you know? So, I wasn't particularly impressed, I must say.
Yeah, but could I add one little thing to that, Tomás and Michael? There's the other thing of the numbers in jerseys. I honestly believe in an awful lot of cases, not enough, shall we say, importance is given to these numbers, and that they stand out and they're distinguishable from the jersey that they're adorning. Like sometimes...
Is that all the Joe Martin or Specsavers or sponsorship?
Well, I lost my glasses yesterday when I found them this morning, so I can't be, shall we say, self-criticising myself for having without glasses. But no, honestly, sometimes the colour kind of blends in with the backdrop, and it makes it very, very difficult to see, even when you have the bulbs working, you know, at full throttle, so to speak.
Well, no, that
so how dare you be criticizing my eyesight?
No, but again, you're right, both of you, in the sense that, again, listen to what, I can't remember which one it was now, but one of the match reports on radio over the weekend, and that point was being made, and that it was difficult to read the numbers, because back in the day, for example, Tomás, Kilkenny hurlers, the black and amber, but they always had these big white patches on the back with the number on it. I mean, that always stands out to me, kind of, you know.
It's only maybe to the players and to the county boards and that, it's only a small point. But for the spectator, to the uninitiated in particular, who go to the occasional game and they have a programme in front of them, what number was that at the far side of the field, they're asking? You know, and sure enough, it's okay for you. You know who the guy is, so to speak, and it's easy to kind of maybe just, instinctively identify him. But you need
Martin, I have a solution. I have a solution. Don't tell anybody.
All right, don't pay too much.
We'll
come out my veil, don't that.
We'll put him in yellow, the same as the slitter and the new football that's going to be brought out.
That's all right. I'd ring John Frenty. I come up with a solution.
Michael, did you have any problem when you were sitting watching the Galway footballers last weekend with numbers?
Well, do you know what? As was said a moment ago.
Oh, I'm not sure at all. I'm anti-Christ coming up with that question.
No. Genuinely, when you know lads, you know them, kind of, and particularly in football. Hurling is slightly different, obviously, because of helmets and things like that, you know? The one thing that struck me more in Salt Hill last Sunday was trying to identify the number of fellas who weren't there, as opposed to those that were, not making any excuses for Galway, because Derry were certainly, Martin, the better team. There's no doubt about that. But two points I want to make, Martin, if I may, or just ask you about.
Yes.
Obviously, the number of people missing from Galway is just we've touched on this, like, in terms of injuries and so forth, you know. Like Damien Comer, for example, I'm just wondering, this is the Galway full forward.
Yes.
He's missing more matches than he's playing these days, you know, so.
That's right. That's right. Oh, no, he's been absolutely wrecked with injuries in the last while. Shea Walsh alongside him, Paul Conroy, was, as I said, Liam Silk was gone, Jack Glynn. But Damien Comer basically has been, in a sense, lurching from one injury to the next, kind of, you know, here a game, gone a game kind of thing. And yeah, it's very, very difficult to build up a run of form. It's very difficult for him to, shall we say, sharpen up his game, you know, alongside his teammates. They need to kind of get used to his style. He needs to kind of reestablish him, you know, himself with them. But when you're going from one injury to another, Michael, it kind of deems that practically impossible. And I think his return to full health is vital for Galway. And like this weekend coming, like Galway are, I think they're away to Monaghan. It's a big It's a big game for both, actually. Like if Monaghan lose that, I'd say Monaghan will probably go down. Because the most points they can gain after that is 6 points. Whereas if Galway win that, Galway, okay, they've left themselves, I think, in a reasonable state. I know their last two games are against Kerry and against Dublin, difficult assignments. But this is a must-win game for Galway at the weekend. And if they had Damien Comer fully fit, if they had Shea Walsh fully fit, those guys are critical to a successful Galway season. And to have so many of them injured at the moment makes life very difficult for Pádraig Joyce. It makes life very, very difficult to get a team system working, that sharpness kind of around the team kind of improved on, and to have them fit over the next few weeks is critical to a successful Galway season. Because remember, Michael, we're into March this weekend. Our championship starts at the beginning of April, and basically, unless lads are kind of certainly kind of going full throttle over the next number of weeks, it's going to be very hard for them to see their best form when championship comes around in April and May.
One other question, Martin, that I just want to ask you to think about is looking at Derry last Sunday, and we all know that some of the Glen players went straight from winning the club championship straight back into the Derry team, and were applauded for that and whatever. I was watching last Sunday, Conor Glass at midfield, an outstanding player. And for the first, Martin, for the first 20 minutes maybe, he was dominating the middle of the field. But then I noticed after that, himself and a couple of the other Glen players, they just kind of faded out of the game. And I'm just wondering, are they playing too much football too early in the year?
There could be that. There could be an element of that to it, actually. It's impossible for the body to keep kind of, shall we say, finding its best form when it hasn't had an opportunity to recover. Now, nobody know better than Mickey Hart the requirements in that respect. And I wouldn't be surprised to see over the next couple of games, Mickey Hart resting Conor Glass and resting the Glen players now that they have sufficient points to get to a league final and to prepare themselves for the Ulster Championship. But to ask them to continue to play over the next three games, when from a points point of view, it's going to make no difference. And I think it's asking too much of them. I know you could say the same, you know, when you look at the Cliffords down in Kerry. Now, in fairness, the Cliffords, I think Jack O'Connor gave the Cliffords the first couple of games off this year because of their achievements with Fossa last year and the fact that they were going all year round. I saw in Mayo a Jack Carney, who again the previous year had won the All-Ireland Club with Kilmaine at junior level. But he wasn't given a rest. And he was like that, Michael. You would get maybe 10 minutes, like I know from being involved in the club junior intermediate team this year against him. You get maybe 10 minutes off him, but the rest of the time he was just operating on kind of on memory. And I think, like I said, there is that danger with Conor Glass and the Glen lads. They need to be maybe just rested up a little bit now if they're to get the best out of themselves in championship. Because championship means, apart from your provincial kind of campaign, it means a minimum of three games for Sam Maguire after that before you get to a quarter final. You have a huge schedule of games in a very, very concentrated period of time. Everything shoehorned into maybe a 7 or 8 week period. And you need freshness, certainly, later in the season. And for that, to achieve that, rather, I think the likes of Glass and the Glen lads maybe should be given time off. But again, it's up to a management and it's up to the players themselves, maybe just to talk it through with management.
Yeah, surely. Last week, guys, we were talking, amongst other things, about Kildare football with Glen Ryan and the issues there. Kind of, you know, this is the Kildare manager and what was going on in Kildare and whatever. And Martin, it didn't get any better last weekend.
Oh, no, it didn't get better. It didn't get better at all, actually. And, you know, like as Colm O'Rourke said, the meeting manager afterwards, he's a very young team, that are kind of finding their way, so to speak. But to win the last day, like, it took them up to 5 points and has taken them, it has left them comfortable for, you know, in that division probably for the coming year. But Kildare without a point. If, for example, this weekend, they're travelling to Cork this weekend, if they lose that game, and like Cork have just 2 points, but if Kildare lose that game, I think that's Kildare bunched. That's Kildare in top of the cup territory.
100%, yeah.
So this is a huge weekend for Kildare. Like the following weekend, they go on, or the next game rather, I think it's on the St. Patrick's Day weekend, they're at home to Donegal, but home, as we know, is in Carlow now. And honestly, I believe in losing the last eight, I mean, they've left themselves in a perilous position and would be hot favourites to go down to Division 2 at this stage. And there's one other small point about Kildare that I've noticed. They played 4 games, Michael. They haven't scored a goal kind. Like, I mean, their opening game, they scored 12 points against Cavan. Their second game, I think, they scored, the same number against Fermanagh. They lost the third game, they scored 8 points against Fermanagh. Last week, they only scored 9 points. So it's clear, maybe, to the outsider looking in, that apart from maybe poor morale within the group, there's certainly an issue up front when it comes to scoring. And without scoring a goal over four games, the finger is pointing very clearly in one direction.
Yeah, unfortunately, Martin, I have to agree with you. They look like Division 3 next year. You know, that's just the reality of it. But anyway.
Yeah, well, look, you don't wish it on anybody, but that looks the reality. It's simple. And incidentally, could I just make a small little point about Cork travelling last weekend and they beat Fermanagh? They played in the ground last weekend in Edderley. Now, some of you might know where Edderley is. When I happened to drive through it last weekend going from Ballyshannon to Omagh to the Mayo game, and Edderley is between two little villages called Lack and Kesh. And both of them, it's the only place that, certainly in Kesh, that you see a Free Presbyterian church. No, I kid you not. Edderley is about 2 miles further down the road, and it's clearly a nationalist enclave there. But they brought Cork up there, and they're a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful Gaelic community there, wonderful footballing community. And to us, I'd love you to meet maybe one or two of the Cork lads and just ask them about the welcome they got there, the quality, the facilities there, and all of that. But it's one of those grounds that it's very difficult to win in. But Cork, I think by virtue of their last-minute scores, actually kind of put one over in Fermanagh. And I know there's huge disappointment up there that they didn't make the most of the opportunity.
Yeah, and Martin, I'd say, it was a fair amount of travel for Cork footballers in the last couple of weeks and stuff as well. And I was in Parky Cueven, you know, people were on their phones, people were listening to Radio 1 to get updates on the match and stuff like that. We'd say the so-called hurling fraternity, and you had a lot of football people there that couldn't have travelled to Fermanagh, and there was a bit of excitement when they got the final result to say that Cork had managed to get a win above there, because people were questioning Cork football for the last couple of weeks, probably still are questioning Cork football. But I think that was a massive result for John Cleary and his backroom team, because it takes a bit of pressure off, because there was a lot of pressure, I would think, definitely. And this talk of going down to Tarleton Cup and stuff like that as well was weighing heavily on them, I'd say, John Cleary and himself. And It was a good result. So they got, but they got to follow her up, I think.
But they got to follow it up to see against Kildare. It's a huge game for them against Kildare.
And then things won't look so bad if they get a result there.
Yeah, well, they need to get a result in that, Tomás, and they need to get the result in next week against Meath, because their final game of the final game, I think, in the league is against Armagh.
And that's right.
Armagh, to me, of all the two divisions, you could nearly kind of say have been the form team. They've been outstanding, actually, in many respects. And they will not be an easy team to take points from, even if it is the last game of the league.
And
that's a fair point.
Yeah.
Just going back there a second, Martin, and talking about small venues that you were talking about in Fermanagh and that kind of stuff at the weekend. I remember a couple of years ago doing a feature for RTE Sport for the Sunday game or something. I can't remember exactly what it was, on the smaller counties in football.
Yes.
And there was a league match between Waterford and Wexford. And
right.
It was played down in a place called Leamy Brine in Waterford.
Yes, Leamy Brine,
small little club and that kind of crack. In actual fact, if you look at the tables at the moment, unfortunately, Waterford are bottom of Division 4 in the football, but there you go. But anyway, we're going around to the camera crew. We're doing a kind of a feature on this match and what it's like kind of in the lower echelons, if you like. And this fella watching the match, and there was only about 200 people watching it, in fairness, but he looked at us going past and he says, "Ye covering it, lads?" And I said, yeah, I said, we're doing a bit." And he says, "I presume you're doing it for the debt notices."
That's lovely, Michael. That's lovely.
I'm sorry you heard that.
Anyway, Tomás, looking forward. The Hurling fan, and both of you, in actual fact, kind of, you know, over the next weekend, let's say, what can we expect? What should we be looking out for?
Well, I suppose, look, when I was listening on the way to the match on Sunday, because it was a quarter four, I was listening to some of the other results, and I was getting a bit of excitement about the performance from Offaly. I mean, they had a brilliant first half against Kilkenny, can they maintain this? And then you were here. There was a gale of a breeze favouring Kilkenny into the second half, and 10 minutes into it, Kilkenny had actually whittled down that lead and gone ahead. You know, but it has to be good for Offaly. You know, I think Martin, myself, we were mentioning, and it's, you know, Wexford against Clare. Wexford won 13, Clare 16 points last weekend in difficult conditions. Clare that were absolutely flying, and this was in the melting pot down to the last stroke, and there was an opportunity for Wexford to win it with a free, but it tailed off wide. But I like to see that, Michael, in terms of we all talk about Limerick, and we can talk about Kilkenny, or we can talk about Galway or Tipperary, but for hurling, we need Wexford. We need Offaly. We need them to be performing at their best. We need Cork to be performing at their best, because we're not even mentioned when you come to Limerick, Galway, and Tipperary or Kilkenny. Cork are even below that, and kind of the one team that's there, and it's Waterford in terms of where they're at, because there are 10 or 12 fellas out injured. You know, you've 2 matches left in your league campaign in terms of hurling. And then you're into April, where championship comes, right? And I would say the same thing about Cork in terms of 11 changes last weekend. Will Pat Ryan make more changes for the next game to blood new players, to see more players? But when do you stop and say, I need consistency now, I need to start picking my championship 15, we've got to play together? And I think Davy and Cork are in that mould, to be honest with you. I think Brian Lowen and Clare is probably more where he is when he's starting 15. Cal and Tipperary the same way as well. It's going to be an interesting couple of weeks in terms of this campaign, and who wants to push on now in terms of going to a league final or going to league semi-finals, you know?
I'm just thinking that I saw a couple of things, Tomás, during the week about Dublin hurlers and where they're at, and questions being raised by people. Has Micheál Donoghue, their manager, taking them as far as he can take them, or where are they at? Because I know personally there's a lot of push in Dublin to promote hurling and that, But at the moment, it seems to be stuck in the glue.
It does, Michael. And, you know, it's they get to a certain level. But can they push themselves beyond that level then, right? And there was a lot of excitement back in Dublin, getting to an All-Ireland semi-final under Anthony Daly, you know, having a bit of success, very good success. But really, has it materialised afterwards? I mean, the problem that you have is the dominant or the dual player status. The guys that are really playing very well in terms of club hurling above there are probably footballers as well, and they're giving their allegiance to Dublin football, and it's going to be very, very difficult, you know. And I suppose when you look at their score, 118, had a good 15, 20 minutes opening period against Limerick, but then they were blown away, you know. And that's what Limerick are doing to most teams, right? I mean, Limerick putting up the score, 3:30 on a Saturday night, you know, in Croke Park. It's as ominous for everybody else around the country. And I was going to slag in a couple of Limerick boys, send them text messages. We might as well hand you out the cup now at this stage, you know. So, because they look very, very dominant and exceptional, to be honest, which are very, very good. And Dublin of Arsenal going into Croke Park, you come up against a Limerick team like that, Michael, there's not a whole lot you can do, you know.
No, there's not. I was just going to say that, like, you wouldn't blame any team for getting beaten by Limerick at the moment. That's for sure. Moss, we'll leave it there because we've covered everything, I think. As I said, always good to talk to you guys. We'll have plenty more to talk about this time next week when we're back again after the next round of fixtures. But for the moment, to Moss Mackay and to Martin Carney, thank you so much. Thank you to all of you for listening. See you in a week's time.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.